Tom Fortino. He is the owner-operator, the founder and principal at the Alpha Wealth Group. He also is heard Sunday mornings on WGN Radio at 7 a.m. Listen for This Week in Wealth. In fact, I caught your show last Sunday, and Tom, I almost called or texted in. It sounded really good. Keep up the good work on Sundays.
Well, thank you, John. I'm always trying to provide some information, or as I like to say, actionable items that are going to make a difference for those in retirement or nearing retirement.
Well, you were talking about taxes, and I don't even remember what the exact thing was, but I just thought some of the specifics you were giving people I thought were really helpful. You and I only have a few minutes when we talk on this show, and we talk about bigger trends. For instance, the S&P 500. I mentioned how good the markets are all doing. And the question I've been asking a lot of our guests lately is this, do the fundamentals support this? Is this maybe a good time to get conservative maybe with some of your money? I don't know. What are you thinking about the markets right now?
Well, when you talk about fundamentals, John, we're talking about valuations typically. You know, there's technical indicators, there's fundamental indicators. Some will look at charts and momentum and volume and so on. And so the momentum is up. That's just the fact. It doesn't. I don't know if anyone would have a separate opinion. They'd be wrong. And so when you talk about fundamentals, you're saying, is it overvalued? And it's run a little bit, hot here. You know, if you look at the S&P, for example, I think the forward P's 21 or so. That's a little high. It's not off the charts like it was, you know, when we had the tech bubble. But we just want to be aware of that. I think what we're starting to see, though, is a rotation into different sectors, right? You probably had these discussions already with others from this Magnificent Seven. If you look at the last month, technology is not the best performing sector. It's energy, it's utilities, it's materials. And so, you know, these are, and if you look at the equal weighted S&P, that's performing. Small cap is starting to outperform. So I think there's some rotation happening here into different sectors and areas where there's more upside.
You think some of those smaller companies are just due, Tom? I mean, they've been underperforming long enough. Eventually, the business cycles for all those industries swing back, right?
I mean, that's the reality of it. We can't time it, so I always say let's be cautious on these things. If you're disciplined and you trade and you're going to watch some of these indicators, you know, the small cap has been outperforming. Yes, they've been undervalued relative to the large cap. Some of the lowest valuations we've seen in a long, long time. And then that also ties in with interest rates as we think they're going to go down potentially. I shouldn't say we. Some people think they're going to go down. That also bodes well for the small cap. So you can buy these ETFs. You can own the sectors. You can own the small cap. The good news is there's an easy way to get into these. The other flip side of that is you got to be careful in your overall portfolio.
You do think interest rates are going to go down, don't you?
Myself?
Yeah.
I'm not really that confident. I know Powell came out. In fact, it's interesting. We had this conversation, I think, at the beginning of the year, and some people were saying there's going to be six interest rate drops here. And so far we've seen zero. I think we'll see certainly with the tomorrow these indicators, the PC, which is what the Fed looks at. But I'm a little more skeptical on these interest rates being.
I'm going to give you three numbers. I'm going to give you three numbers. You tell me which one you think is the number of interest rate drops we're going to see this year. Two, three, and four. Two, three, or four.
I have to pick one of those?
Yeah.
I'll go on the low side, too.
Yeah, you're an outlier. But then again, six is an outlier anymore, too. I think
sure
bet
is.
Money is on three for what it's worth.
Okay. We'll see. I guess we'll find out, right? Are we going to put any money on it or no?
The correct answer is no. Do you think there's a difference between two and three to the economy, to an individual, to maybe a mortgage? Is two or three going to make a difference to people?
You know, I don't think it's going to make a big difference. There's more things that are going to come into play, and we just can't, you know, see where this economy is going. There's just no certainty, you know, with these rate hikes. I think there's a leveling off and some normalcy here of saying, okay, these interest rates, that's not, you know, the end of the world with some of these rates. There's some good side to it, too. So I don't think it's going to be as impactful as some say. We just have to be aware of that. You know, the 10-year, I just heard the announcement at the top of the hour, the 10-year is at 4.2 today. It was down as low as 3.8. So You know, the bond market has a lot to do with this too.
Heard a conversation with somebody about putting money in a Roth IRA now and paying the taxes now versus waiting and paying the taxes later. Is there a rule of thumb about that? I mean, it's kind of a guessing game about where the top margin taxes are going to be in the future, right?
Well, we don't know, but we do know that tax rates are at a marginal tax breaks are at a 40-year low, and debt is at an all-time high. So we have to say, what's the probability going forward? What the tax rates are? Do I, you know, the old adage, do I pay on the seed, not on the harvest? Certainly, you want to know: are you in a 22 or 24 bracket? You want to understand, but I think there's opportunities here to do that. Absolutely, you should be aware of that, and I think you want to be proactive. I call it forward tax planning, but I certainly think there's opportunities to get money into tax free. So down the road, the tax rate on it is always zero.
I guess the guess is not just what the rates are going to be, but also what your income is going to be in the future. Where in fact, will your margin be? Where, you know, how much income are you going to have? That's a conversation for you and me another day, and we'll listen on Sunday to Tom Fortino from the Alpha Wealth Group. If you want more advice from this man, click on alphawealthgroup.com. Nice to hear your voice, Tom.
Oh, good to talk to you, John. You take care.
Aki Ito, chief correspondent at Business Insider, joins us again with the strangest dang story I've heard from you guys in a long time. Aki, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well. And now this story says that if you're enduring a recession, that might actually be good for longevity. Is that right?
Yeah, it's quite puzzling, right? This one surprised me too.
What's the story? What's the report?
So a bunch of economists took a look at what happened during the Great Recession from 2007 to 2009. They looked at every local area's unemployment rate and also mortality rate. And they found that, you know, surprisingly, the higher the unemployment rate went, the more mortality actually dropped. So the fewer people died, and they went about trying to figure out why.
So you would think during a recession, I don't know, if people are unemployed, are they exercising more or less? If they have less money, they have less money to spend on good food. Maybe they cancel their gym membership. I can't see the link. What's the connection there?
Yeah, so the economists rolled out a lot of different possible explanations. You know, at first they theorized like maybe laid off workers, you know, have more free time, so they were using that free time to exercise more, or maybe because money was tighter, you know, they weren't buying as many cigarettes, or maybe they were drinking less. They also looked at, you know, maybe since people are going out less, you know, congregating less, maybe infectious diseases are spreading less, and therefore people are, you know, less likely to get the flu or something like that. But they looked into all of that, and they found that that didn't really pan out. And ultimately, the only thing that they found that was like a really big factor was pollution. Because in a recession, people, you know, drive into work less because they lose their jobs. They drive out to, you know, town to go out and eat and stuff. And so all this less activity ends up translating to less pollution, and that ends up saving people's lives.
Yeah, I don't know if an analogy is what happened during the pandemic, but the smog lifted from cities, the rivers looked cleaner, people just weren't on the road, we weren't doing stuff, and we weren't doing stuff because of the pandemic, but you're not doing as much stuff if you don't have much money because of a recession. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. And this is one thing that I didn't know before I started reporting out this story. But there is a lot of, there are a lot of like negative health effects that are linked to, air pollution, that go well beyond something that you would expect, like asthma or lung disease. What happens is, you know, these fine particulate matters, there's one in particular called PM2.5, that, you know, gets through into the bloodstream through the lungs and then travels all the way to organs like the brain. So they found that when pollution levels are high, you know, for example, there are more car crashes because, you know, people's brains are operating less effectively, so their cognition declines. So there are all kinds of ways in which pollution leads to heart disease, suicide, car crashes, like I just mentioned. When you look into it, you find that during the Great Recession, these areas with really high unemployment actually had lower rates of these things like heart disease, suicide, and car crashes.
Yeah, you said during the recessions, fewer people drive to work, factories and offices slow down, people cut back on their own energy use to save money. That reduced activity leads to cleaner air, and particularly in areas that are lower income, where maybe some of these factories exist or people are driving to work, and that's where people enjoy poorer health overall. Less activity, less pollution means better longevity outcomes for these people. Recessions actually make people live longer. Aki Ito's story at businessinsider.com. You can check it out there. Aki, thanks for your help today.
Thank you so much for having me.
More from the Your Hometown series as we feature the Village of Mundelein. Come with us as we discover why Mundelein should be your hometown. Sponsored by Illinois Lottery, doing good and supporting Illinois communities, and by McDonald's.
Yeah, that's what we're doing today. It's 12:36 on WGN. Enjoyed some McNuggets a little while ago, but let's wash it down with something good now. Bruce Durr is here, the owner and founder from Tighthead Brewing Company. That's in Mundelein. This is the brew pub that folks know in those parts. Maybe we all should know a little bit more about it. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the show. You're on WGN.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Pretty good. Let's start with Tighthead. I know the answer, but tell us the reason that the brewing company is called Tighthead Brewing.
So I played rugby for about 13 years while in college, and then about 9 years in the city of Chicago with a club team. So Tighthead is a position in rugby. So I was a Tighthead prop. And that was kind of my position.
That's
so
one of the guys
it just
in the
meant
middle,
something to
in,
me.
In the middle
yeah,
of
kinda,
the screen.
Right. Yeah. Wow. In the front, yep. Front right side. So, yeah. And it lent itself to a name, as a company name. There's not really a theme that runs through the brewery as far as how we name our beers, but it's something that meant something to me, and it's kind of what we went with. So.
You started out in corporate America. You were in, what was it, like human relations or something like that, a human resource professional?
Yeah, exactly. I did comp and benefits and HR systems and stuff. So for
but
about 20
you
years.
You were kind of a home brewer, and was it your wife or brother got you a home brewing kit, and that kind of started it all, huh?
Yeah. The year before we got married, my wife on the suggestion from my brother, who had been homebrewing, got me a kit. So that was 1992, right around there. So that's when I started brewing. I continued to brew all those years in corporate. I became a beer judge. I was just kind of a beer geek. I read about beer history, beer culture. So after, kind of getting shoved around a little bit and reorganized in corporate, we finally decided our kids were a little older and it was time to have my own business. So
you actually studied, I read this too, at the, what was the name of the place in Chicago? The Seibel Institute of Technology
Institute.
Brewing School in Chicago.
Yep, Seibel.
Seibel.
That's pronounced.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the, it's the oldest brewing school in the United States. Started about 1850.
Huh.
And up until probably the late 80s, early 90s, more universities started bringing it on. UC Davis always had a program for winemaking. But, it's one of the oldest in the world. So
I didn't know we had that
in the
country. So you get your education there, but it's still kind of a leap, I suppose, to, borrow the money, get the money, and make your own business out of it.
Yeah, that was really kind of gave myself a little credibility going to banks and asking for money. If you've been in small production breweries, there's a lot of stainless in those buildings. So that's not cheap. So it really just gave myself credibility, when I was out there looking to get it started.
So so you guys have been in business for how long then? Since like 2011, right?
Yeah. We brewed our first batch September 2011.
And what's the popular brew there these days? What are some of the things on tap?
We do 6 year-round beers. The most popular probably being our Irie IPA, which is a big West Coast IPA, 7.8%. We have our Scarlet Fire, which is an Irish red ale. Scarlet won a gold medal in the Great American Beer Fest in 2018 for Irish Reds. So that was a big success and really helped with that brand.
And do you guys serve food at your place as well?
We do not. We do have some ideas and maybe bring that in. Over the years, the laws in Illinois have kind of continued to benefit small brewers. So that's one of the things that has opened up in the last few years. And we might take advantage of that here soon, but right now we do not. We do food trucks visit usually Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So people can bring food in. We allow them to order pizzas or whatever they like.
Yeah, that's kind of a trend anyway. That might actually be somewhat advantageous, too. So we're talking about Tighthead Brewing Company in Mundelein. And how's business been last year or two? Is this still a good business to be in, Bruce?
It is. It's been good for us. So we had a lot of growth in Illinois in the craft industry, escalating up to about 310 breweries, I think, at the end of probably 2022, 2021. It's gotten hard. I think a lot of people got a little overextended during the pandemic and trying to make it through that. So we did have a little bit of a downturn last year. We lost about 40 breweries across Illinois. But we have a good reputation. We've been around. We have a great local following. So we're doing okay. We'll make it through and, but it's good. I just everybody should get out and support craft beer.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I think it's a good business to be in. It seems like every town maybe has a local movie theater if you're lucky, but it seems like every town also has a local brewery. In Mundelein, it's Tighthead Brewing. Tighthead Brewing Company. The website is tightheadbrewing.com. You can find it there online and, of course, in Mundelein. Bruce, it's nice to meet you. Congratulations. Keep up the good work.
All right. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Bruce Durr, founder at Tighthead Brewing Company. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Riverwoods-based Discover Financial Services is losing its CEO just weeks after he took over. Michael Rhodes has resigned to become CEO at Ally Financial. He became Discover's CEO on February 1st. His departure is not expected to impact the company's acquisition of Capital One. That deal was announced right after Rhodes became CEO. Popular Mexican restaurant Uncle Julio's has closed abruptly after more than 3 decades in Chicago's Lincoln Park. The restaurant says it's closing because of rising rent. Uncle Julio's opened in the early 1990s and helped spur development along the now bustling Clybourne Corridor. Some workers have been offered jobs at suburban locations. Online retailer Wayfair is hiring as it moves closer to opening its first physical store in Illinois in Wilmette. The grand opening is set for May 4th in the Edens Plaza Shopping Center. The company is hiring 200 people. 3 hiring events are scheduled for April at the Wilmette location. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
How about more business of food? Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm going to mention something that will raise the blood pressure of many of our farmer friends. After I thank the Chevy Silverado, what the heck, I'll go ahead and mention it right now.
The United States Environmental Protection Agency.
What many farmers and ranchers consider the symbol of government overregulation. Well, something's changing. After I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today, there's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, here's the problem as farmers see it. The EPA often makes rules about how farmers do their business without seeming to care how farmers are affected. Here's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
But we need to educate EPA as it does its work about this is going to be the impact.
All right, well, the people running the EPA decided to establish an Office of Agriculture and Rural Affairs
to ensure that your voices are heard and that your ideas are understood.
That's Michael Regan. He's the boss at the EPA, who calls this
an important step that will help solidify EPA's relationship in the agriculture sector for the future.
Yeah, I know there are some skeptical farmers who buy into what Ronald Reagan said many years ago about the 9 scariest words in the English language.
I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
But EPA Chief Regan says he's been doing his homework.
During my visits to family farms over the past 3 years, I've observed numerous ways you all are using innovation to improve productivity and profitability while also reducing environmental impact.
He says the cooperation will help in many ways, including dealing with climate change, and Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack agrees.
Now you've got this office, so there's an easier vehicle for that to take place, and I can reinforce what farmers are telling you directly.
One thing farmers are telling him directly is that cows, especially cows, but all of agriculture is unfairly being blamed for causing greenhouse gases. They play a part, yeah, but not as big a part as some of the people who don't like animal agriculture would have you believe. The EPA says agriculture's contribution to greenhouse gases in the United States is 10%. It says the other 90% comes from all of the fossil fuels that we burn in our cars and trucks and planes and ships and industry, etc. On the food calendar, it's National Black Forest Cake Day, and it's National Eat Something on a Stick Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Tavern on Rush went away, and word on the street is it's coming back. Phil Stefani, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Very good. Thank you.
Why did it go away?
Well, it went away because I had a 25-year lease, and the landlord decided that he was going to try it on his own. And so I didn't really have a choice.
That's funny because that's the sort of thing we heard a lot during the pandemic. Where
yeah, that's what it was. I mean, it was strictly the fact that it's like anything else. I mean, you have a lease in an apartment or whatever, then the landlord decides that he wants to go a different direction. So it was never a question of increase in rent or so forth. Like I just saw today, you guys just announced a little while ago that restaurant Julio's over in Lincoln Park is closing after 30 some years, and in their case the rent went up and they decided it didn't merit it. So
what went into the old Tavern on Rush site, Phil?
So there's a restaurant run by ownership, run by the landlord, called Bellevue.
I see. And now you've since moved across the street and you'll be opening up. What's your date for the new location?
So we're looking at mid-June. We're directly across the street. I always felt that once we had closed Tavern, different developers and hotel property owners called us, offered us great deals and so forth.
Yeah.
But I believe that Tavern had to be on the corner of Rush and Bellevue. And obviously, so that's where we're going. We're going to be on the corner of Rush and Bellevue, just that we'll be, on the southeast corner this time. So
you throw tomatoes across the street at the old place now?
No, I don't. I look at it a little bit differently. As a matter of fact, last couple of months, I've been having breakfast there every day at Bellevue. My friend owns it. He's my friend of 40 years. So there's no animosity there. I believe that there's room for all of us, and if we all do a good job, we bring in more people to the area. So no animosity whatsoever.
When you close, though, it just sent ripples across Chicago and the Midwest, and I'm sure you heard it. And I'll bet it started to grate on your nerves. It's like, hey, it wasn't my idea, and what am I going to do?
Well, so that was the thing. And the thing is that it really took the last day for me really to absorb or understand how iconic this restaurant was. I don't think never in the history of Chicago, the last day there was 5 stations shooting live at 6 o'clock.
Think about that.
News.
Yeah.
So when you look at it that way, I mean, other restaurants have closed. We've seen them. But you didn't have, 5 TV stations all shooting live inside the restaurant. So I realized at that point that it was iconic, and that's why it's taken a little longer than I wanted. But I thought we had to bring it back. So we have a 25-year deal, and now I'm looking forward to my son and daughter kind of driving the bus on the next 25 years, and we're excited about it.
It's still going to be called Tavern on Rush. It's still a Tavern on Rush. Now at 1015 North Rush Street on the ground and second floor of the luxury hotel Thompson Chicago, opening in June. By the way, also tell me about
this. So we're going to be similar to the old tavern because we'll have the big bar and lounge on the first floor. And the dining room is, the full dining room is really on the second floor. So it's kind of identical to what I had before.
Is Benny going to be there?
Benny's going to be there. Yeah, he can't wait. He's at Stefani Prime in Lincolnwood right now, but he's been holding court there for the last year, but he'll be there.
He's the well-known kind of face up front, the maitre d' there.
Hey, he opened it and closed it. You know, it was interesting that people didn't really want to care if I was around. They only cared if Benny was around.
Well, he's the guy that said hello, Ari.
That guaranteed him a table. So.
Hey, Phil, for folks who haven't been there to Tavern on Rush, what's the menu? Just give me the headline on what people get when they go there.
So we're going to come in with our prime steak program. Then we'll have our seafood as we did at the old. And then we'll come in with some new, innovative, and fresh items to add to the menu.
Okay. I got to go, but just give me the headline also on the Pasta Lab. Can you tell me what that is?
That's in, I'm glad you mentioned it. It's on Milwaukee and Elston. It's where we manufacture fresh pasta. And then next, then you can also purchase it and then purchase the sauce and take it home and cook it there. Or number three, you can eat it there. So we have like 40-some seats that you can literally pick your choice of pasta and sauces and dine and eat it right there. So
you brought in a Michelin star chef from Italy.
From Bologna, have Vincenzo, who's a Michelin star chef from Bologna. Bologna is really the food capital of Italy. And he's coming in with some, you know, new recipes and so forth. And, you know, giving the public a chance to experience something different, something authentic, and so forth.
How do I pronounce the name of that? Is it Bottega?
Stefani Bottega, right.
Stefani Bottega, B-O-T-T-E-G-A, Italiana.
Correct.
And that's, what's the address on that one again?
It's right on the corner of Milwaukee and Elston Avenue.
I know where that is. Hey, on behalf of everybody, we're so glad you're back. Not that you really went away. But
We're excited. Yeah, thank you. Well, we're getting a big... Everybody's waiting. They've been waiting a long time, but now we're going to make it happen.
You have a hard date on that? June what?
Sometime mid-June.
Okay. We'll be in touch. Thanks, Phil.
Very good. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.